I've been paying attention to a new design tool called Subframe. So I invited their co-founder, Philip Skrzyszynski, on to give us a demo and just talk through the vision a little bit. And one of my favorite parts is seeing the different patterns they've adopted for interacting with AI. And things like contextual edits and a totally new way to think about prototyping. So let's start by learning more about the Subframe journey and what led them to go all in on designers.
The story with Subframe and why it's unique is that it is kind of the last design tool before AI, because we built all of it without any LLMs under the hood to power, you know, the design code translation layer. And I think a lot of that had to do with really thinking from a technical first approach from the constraints of code and building like a visual tool that works around it. You know, where we are in San Francisco, small startup, like everyone, you know, walk into any coffee shop, someone's like building something, right? So our product strategy and go-to-market really revolved around early stage founders. And that's because in a lot of ways, the moment you cross into that code space, even though you're designing with code, you're kind of a builder. You're not just in an abstractive world, just drawing pictures. You're kind of building the thing. And so the first builders for us were those founders, because they have to do all of product, all of design, all of front end, all of back end, and do it all every day. And many of them actually were not designers, right? And we're not front-end experts. So we built this tool that let them just get to code so much faster to build like beautiful UI. And a lot of it was template driven, you know, like you have colors, you have components out of the box, you have preset spacing, and all of that just helps you design with better defaults. So that was really our first, you know, year after we launched, was continuing to go down this like early stage, you know, Y Combinator. Like last summer, we had like 20% of YC companies use Subframe to just build their MVPs. And then something very interesting happened at the end of last year, right? Which was we resisted AI ourselves for a while, because we were like, are the models good enough? What does this mean? How do we integrate that well? And what happened was this kind of AI coding explosion in the market, right? You had all the builder tools like, you know, your Lovables, your Bolts kind of just blow up and come up from nowhere. And in some ways, I think a lot of the what I mentioned with like competing with the large language model, a lot of that initial, you know, ICP for us, the founders, like Cursor and just ChatGPT and Claude kind of took those away from us. Because again, these were people who just needed a dashboard and they had no way to do that before. Now they can get a dashboard from an LLM. But we're a design tool, right? Where you can craft things. And so suddenly that opened up this market of like designers who for so long were stuck just, again, being far away from code. Suddenly we're like, wait, I can just like prompt this thing and build a real interactive like web app. Like, that's pretty freaking cool. I want to be working closer with that, but I still need design and design control and a tool where I could drag and drop to be like my interface for working with this code and these large language models. So at the end of last year, this kind of explosion happened where designers kind of became enlightened, I think, with working from code. We hooked up large language models with, you know, our system, which, because it's built on code, worked really well to generate good looking designs that we were able to train and give you a canvas for working with them. And at the beginning of last year, yeah, designers came flooding in because they try out these other tools and they're like, can't hand this code off to an engineer because it's not using our system. I can't drag and drop stuff around. It doesn't feel like a design tool. And they're kind of finding us, because right now we're sort of in that unique position because we started before AI, that we can do both things.
Yeah, I mean, just clicking through the product, even one of the things that initially stood out to me was just the amount of defaults and things that you have available out of the box. And I could see how you kind of did stumble into this world where all of a sudden you're just equipping the models with a ton of nice pieces and existing layouts. And maybe I'll restate how I kind of am interpreting what you're saying, where you're obviously playing in this world where anyone can kind of become a builder using AI, but Subframe is giving a little bit more control and a little bit more of the fine tuning and creating UIs and interactions for that. Whereas maybe some of the other tools are predominantly just being used for like one-shot prompts. Is that kind of how you're seeing the landscape today?
Yeah, exactly. I think those roles of like product versus engineer versus designers are really going to start to collapse. And if we imagine a world where at the end of the day, we're mostly interacting with some large language model behind the scenes that's, you know, either generating apps for us or just helping write them faster in code, what it really becomes is less of like, oh, your skill set and domain and role equals a specific tool that works in that medium, right? Product managers write documents and briefs, and designers create mockups and vector tools, and only engineers work in an IDE and code editor to write that code. Well, if code and the actual software is the medium for everything now you're just picking the interface that you work with, right? Where non-technical people might just be chatting away, right? They just like that natural language prompt. They don't want to look under the hood. Engineers are going to continue to be looking at the code, right? And they want models that fit into that interface, you know, with like tab, 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 autocomplete, not just chat. And I think designers are visual thinkers, right? And it's a craft that is, yes, inherently visual. It's inherently system level, right? You want to zoom out. You want to look at flows. And I think we're trying to create that visual design first interface for working with code.
Cool. Well, can we see it a little bit? I'd love to get a demo.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Let's go ahead and create a project right now for Dive Club. And we're just going to start fresh. So you'll really get to see what it can look like, you know, that 0 to 1 out of the box. What can I do in Subframe? A lot of the foundations of Subframe, as you were mentioning, are built on systems and the things that us designers spend so much time, you know, crafting and curating. So out of the box, you get a design component library that's, you know, built on all the good stuff, Radix, headless UI components. But everything here is an actual React component that you can interact with. Now, where it gets interesting is entering design mode. So everything in Subframe is a design canvas on top of code. And if we want to go in here and say, hey, all our buttons are circular, we could do that, right? Just like we would, and check out all the different variants. And we've actually just updated the React code that's synced to your code base directly. So it becomes this kind of like storybook for components that's all driven by things like themes. You know, we could very quickly say, all right, great, let's just do, you know, dark mode and you know, pick our fonts very quickly and, you know, apply that. And now all our components are updated as well. So as designers, I think, you know, not just in today's world, but especially in the future world, we're going to be thinking a lot in systems. And often that, these are turning less from systems that are just the UI building blocks that you as a designer are using, and more systems for actually, right, building and often generating entire apps. And so crafting this kind of like foundations first, components, and later things like product context, design system documentation, you know, this actually being your own components, PRDs and brand guidelines and voice and tone, all of that becomes like this context that as a designer, you start to just curate to generate, you know, the apps that you really think are good interfaces. All right. But for today, yeah, let's build a quick little prototype. So we can go ahead and our default is kind of a, you know, we all see a prompt, a chat box in almost everywhere you go. Now I'm actually going to skip that real quick. I'm just going to go in here, and this is sort of really showing the difference, right? Because we built that design tool first, and that's embedded in so much what we do. And it's very quickly to, you know, this is like the old world before AI. You get started, and we say, hey, this is like, you know, our homepage where you got our familiar layers panel properties. And a lot of these also, like, as a designer, I'm always thinking about, like, well, what's the best, you know, design interface for me? You know, things like auto layout being built in, things like these little snippets where I can just click the insert button and just put something to the right or to the left, and all those layouts
Did that
already built in.
automatically add a stack there around that
Yep,
text? Okay, that's pretty
exactly.
cool.
So we try to do smart things, around there. So with all these sort of like pre-built building blocks, again, all of it using your actual design system, you could very quickly, put together something that, hey, here's an interface, right? And everything we just did as a React code, it's already done using your components. And Tailwind is our default, but we can apply this, especially when you're bringing in your own design system, we can curate this to make it exactly your own. Now, that becomes like, I think, a really interesting point in, well, what role does AI play, right? And I think there's kind of different layers. Like, I almost think of it as, as probably main designers, I'm a bit of a coffee snob sometimes. And, every day for the last 10 years, I hand grind my beans and I make my pour over, carefully, and everything is perfect. And as maybe shameful it is to say, recently I bought an espresso machine. And I think AI is kind of like the Nespresso level right now for design, where it's not going to change your world, right? And you're not crafting every single input that's going into it. But you can wake up and you know that in 30 seconds, you're going to have caffeine in you, right? And I think AI is kind of in a similar boat where it's very quick to get you to that good enough starting spot, but it's up to you to take it to the finish line. And that's exactly the philosophy sort of we take. So we could go in and let's just kind of create a new page. And let's start actually crafting, what we want here. So let's put in some ingredients, right? We have our theme, we have our components. I'm gonna put in Dive Club. And this is our like system prompt. It's kind of the lightweight version of it, where I can just give context to the AI for all pages. So we could just say the Dive Club is a design podcast, right? Keep it simple. But you can imagine this actually housing your entire design system documentation guidelines and all your product features. And I think context becomes really interesting when you get into design. I was sitting with a founder recently who was using Subframe to just check off sort of like linear tickets, little design asks that he didn't want to bother a designer with. And we were thinking, what makes a good design? Like when you're sitting next to that senior staff principal level designer, of course, there's a lot of it which is just pure, talent and craft that goes into, hey, this is good UX patterns. This is like a well, polished UI. But I think a lot of it is also context, right? About your existing product. It's like we all have worked with those designers who have been in company for like 5 years and just like know every little thing and can make those quick decisions on the fly. And I think the same thing applies. So being able to capture all that context is like a huge moat for actually creating good design outside of just the layer of polish and, little things you might see here and there.
Such a good point. And it's even something I've been thinking about recently is like context is kind of the new design deliverable, right? Like the UI in isolation isn't everything, right? Like it's so important to understand what can we strategically feed the underlying models. And I love you tying it back to like, actually, that's kind of what makes the best designer on the team to begin with, is they have the years of understanding of all the things that we've tried and why. So it makes a lot of sense to me.
All right, so here we're going to try to give it a little bit of context, just in a prompt. Let's design. I had this idea. I always think about this when I watch YouTube videos. I think yours are a great example of like, what if I could just talk with that person who was on the podcast about what they were talking about? So we're going to do a prompt here, and I'm just going to do, a Dive Club content, and I'm just going to give it all the stuff you have on your website. And let's see what it does, right? So now we're kicking off a prompt here. And we're starting from blank, except we're feeding it all these ingredients. And we're gonna have the AI actually generate multiple versions for you.
Love that.
So this is kind of that, again, a lot of tools are meant for just building. Kind of, you're working with one thing, one at a time, right? one prompt at a time. Design is messy, right? It's inherently, I like a little bit of this, I need to see a little bit of that. Let's see how it all kind of fits together. So we really want to use this as a tool that helps you actually explore and get to that best idea as best as you can.
It also becomes a pipeline of preference data for you too.
Yeah, that's, and you know, we don't do any training on like a aggregate level, right? Your data is your own, but what we do is as you start building in Subframe, the system gets trained on all the designs you've already made.
Very cool.
And so that becomes, again, another like feedback loop of context that you might want to feed in to the system, and essentially gets better and better the more you use it, more tailored to your product. So we got a few examples here, and let's just go, you know, click through some of them. It's using, you know, the components, this kind of default system we have out of the box. And now here's sort of the exciting thing, right? Which is, we got a lot of different variations. I think this one is a little one column too many. And that's because of this layout here. But let's say this is a good starting point. I could just drop this in here, but maybe I'm like, oh, I actually like this banner better, or maybe this header up here. So I could just drag this in.
Interesting.
And this is kind of the difference between, you know, maybe a lot of tools out there, is that design mode layer is always active. All of this is code under the hood. All of this, you know, this was generated with AI, but it's up to you to mix and match and craft sort of every piece that you want. And you can just start creating, you know, your UI. You could go back to design mode. We could get rid of these, right? Make all your edits. All those little things that you go back into and are like, oh, you know, these cards should probably fill, or maybe this should truncate, right? Great.
A lot of the edits that you're making are very contextual in line. I can tell that that's kind of an underlying principle of the system, is you're actually just making changes above the component itself rather than clicking on something and then going to a right panel it almost feels a little bit more distant. So I'm wondering, like, how intentional is that?
There's this kind of spectrum of like, how ambiguous is the ask and how specific and confident are you in what you're asking for? So here's like an example, right? Like, let's go in, and if you know exactly what you want, well, again, you're just going to do it manually, right? If you know what you want, but maybe you just want to do it faster, you could just right click. And this is kind of the, you know, the vibe designing a little bit of a train coin, which is like, yeah, let's get rid of the layers and the properties. And by default, what we do is just expose everything that you can already do with a design tool when you can just right click. So, you know, I could go in and, well, in this case, I think my layers panel is actually helpful because I want to center this, right? So I could just do that without making LLM calls. It's just a faster way. But let's say I try to do something that isn't a design property, right? And so let's add, you know, two buttons at the bottom for subscribing and following. I can just ask AI. So when we detect that, hey, you can't do this automatically, we just default to an LLM call that's contextual to exactly what you selected, and boom, adds it, right? So that's really good for those quick changes.
Yeah, that was.
And then, of course, what we showed before is like, well, maybe you're doing something that's more ambiguous, that you have more, you know, you're like, hey, what's a good design for this, right? Generate me multiple versions of the page and let me mix and match. And that's where the Ask AI panel comes in for this more contextual AI. So to me, it's really about, when I'm in the flow, right, I'm doing a number of these things on the spectrum, and I just want the tool to just like be there for me when I want it.
What's your current thinking in terms of the ICP? You said designers, you've seen an uptick, but like maybe get a little bit more specific than that. What types of designers, what types of companies are proving to be more sticky for you right now?
We've definitely been crushing it with this sort of like the early stage 0 to 1, you know, designer type, especially because if you start in Subframe, you get this whole system out of the box. You know, you could do things where, hey, like we could set up and change all these components and themes ourselves, or we could just say, you know, let me go in here and let's just ask AI to give us a new theme. And so that's a really good way. I think especially early stage designers are generally like so much closer to like the outputs than the code, that just starting here and ending here is, and even being able to ship PRs and sync components, that's really attractive to them. As you know, we design Subframe in Subframe ourselves, so this is exactly what I do. This is exactly how I ship new features, is design it in Subframe, take the code, make a PR. So larger companies are in an interesting spot because I think no one has figured out their workflows yet. They themselves are in this big experimentation phase. You know, we've heard the Shopify's and, you know, these kind of top-down approaches of like, hey, we need to be designing with AI or building with AI or just adding AI wherever we can. And like, you know, I'll be real that what I hear from bigger company leadership is that they want to do more with less, right? And that's a scary position to a lot of designers in the field right now. I do think part of that is this kind of reactionary transition period of figuring it out. Because I think ultimately, like with any major technology change, and you know, AI-powered software building is one of them, is ultimately we're going to do more with more very soon. And I think it's more about how do designers simply just embody that same mindset, right? Ask yourself, how do I do more with less myself? And how can I build without an engineer? How can I design, you know, 10x the things that I can with a little AI-powered design tool? And I think that's sort of where, you know, bigger companies, I think there's a place for design. I think it's going to be actually more embedded, right? As again, people become sort of builders. And whether that means that larger companies grow more teams or, you know, more roles, or it means that there's a lot more startups out there. Smaller teams can do a lot these days, or design founders, right? Like you're so much closer to just building the thing that you want. And I've seen a lot of what's been amazing is actually designers who are in between jobs right now, right? Either for they've been laid off or, you know, they're looking for the next thing. And those are the people who right now are actually investing time to pick up these new tools and learn and take something that was, you know, here's a UX portfolio that I have of just generic SaaS for the last 10 years to, I just built three side projects in like a month and designed and shipped it all myself. Well, dude, all of a sudden, like now you've just like 10x'd yourself as a candidate, right? And I think leaning into that is exactly what hopefully designers, you know, are doing.
Real quick message, and then we can jump back into it. If you're working at a startup right now, then I have some pretty good news for you, because Framer just released an incredible offer that gives startups free access to their launch plan for a year. That's $900 to design and ship your site with Framer, which is a total no-brainer. I mean, I even took advantage of the deal myself. So definitely don't miss out on this offer. You can head to framer.com/startups to learn more. I've been designing for a long time, but somehow I only signed up for Mobin this year. And honestly, I can't believe that it's taken me this long. Like, it's literally a cheat code, being able to find inspiration for basically any pattern, any product, any flow. It's fast, it's beautiful, and I already cannot imagine designing without Mobin. It's the first place that I look at for inspiration, and I can't recommend it enough. So head to dive.club/mobin to get started today. That's Mobin. Okay, now on to the episode. All right, so I'm impressed with the demo and even the way that you've thought about integrating AI. This theming all looks great. Can you tease something? Like when you kind of look forward on the product roadmap a little bit, what are some of the things that you're thinking about or some of the different applications for AI that have you particularly excited?
Yeah, so right now, this is actually a good example and sort of the, hey, we're seeing it all is our AI doesn't go and fully update existing components. It works on the theme level, it works on the page level. And you can see here, it's kind of overriding this, so I can kind of get rid of that. And so some of the things we're doing is just integrating AI to even more levels than you've already seen. That's more contextual. That's more part of the system. The other parts is capturing more of that context. So a lot of bigger companies are asking to bring in their design system, and that's something that we're doing right now through pilots, but we're hoping that anyone can bring in any component they want and, you know, pair it with, again, the context about what you're building and actually have it design like you would with the same material.
Cool.
And then lastly, which we can see is, you know, we're working right now in this kind of difference between tools. We're still working on the design layer, right? So these things here are mostly, while they are code, they're mostly static. And I think what gets really interesting, which a lot of kind of AI code first tools are doing, is, you know, they're letting you actually build interactive things. And that's a feature we have right now in beta. Design mode is we have our kind of home screen, right? And then let's ask AI to quickly, based on this page, you know, design the chat detail view for interacting with the AI version of a designer, include a, you know, right sidebar with a video preview of the episode and a transcript below it. So we're going to make something that's pretty simple, but sometimes it's really hard to actually wire up together, right? We have this kind of like home screen and we want to be able to click into these things and then get a detailed view and then have something that we can actually interact with. We're going to be able to do that with just two pages and essentially the design as the prompt. So a lot of tools, a lot of like chat-based prompting, right? You're always like, am I prompting for the functionality or am I prompting for the design, right? We're design first, as you could see. We could spend probably the next hour tweaking these shadows, right? On all these buttons and all these cards. But at some point, we want to add functionality. And I actually think that design is the best prompt. There's so much embedded in what we've made here that actually describes, right, the functionality. Like we have a subscribe button, we have a search box, right? We have listen now. All of these actually serve as really great context to build more functionality on top of it. And that's exactly our approach, which is you start with the design. Now let's go ahead and just quickly take one of these and save it as a new page. Let's just get rid of that nav bar, and I probably need to, add breadcrumbs to the top. So we're going to need some back navigation. And this is also the fun part of when you start getting into functionality, oftentimes it just impacts the design itself, right? Where you're like, oh, I was going to say that, like, hey, this is the detail view, but I realized I probably need some way to go back to that home view we had. So it's a really good thinking exercise to actually get you to, you know, go in and really craft those designs, all those edge cases that you might have. So what we're going to do here now is we got our detailed view and we have our home view and we're going to go ahead and prototype it. So the way our prototyping works is, again, design first. And what we've done is pretty much just give you a different mode where you could just comment on your designs to add functionality. So instead of just chatting one thing at a time, because we already have the design, all we really need to do is point to the things that we want to do now. So let's go ahead and just give it some maybe broad context, like this is a homepage for showing, you know, podcast episodes. And allow users to click into a card and open the chat detail view to interact with that episode and speaker. And then we could go in and say we want this chat view, just call it now the chat detail view. And I can go here and say that, you know, this is a chat detail view for interacting with an AI version of the podcast speaker. We'll have here pre-filled this with sample. Again, we're not connecting to data right now. It's all kind of that mock data prototype stage, but that's something that, you know, in the future, we'd love to sort of integrate more as well. And here we could say with sample transcript for each kind of episode. And then here we'll go ahead and say, allow the user to type a question and send it in the chat. And then here we'll do reply to the user's question as the specific podcast speaker. So a loading animation before replying. So this is where you get into those little right interactive things. And let's go back here. And I think that should be good enough to start. We'll kind of fingers crossed. Obviously, prompting is an art with a lot of things. But you could kind of see, right, what we're doing here is we're actually just annotating our designs the same way we might actually hand that off to an engineer and giving it some sample data and tweaking our designs a little bit. And then we go ahead and we actually just build the thing. So now we're kicking off. We've given it all that context, and we're doing actually implementing some functionality on top of the existing code, which is the designs that you've made.
Talk to me a little bit about the exploration process for that set of interactions, because there's not actually that much precedent. And in the back of my head, for a lot of these like code-based design tools, it's been unclear to me what does prototyping look like in that world. And so it's very interesting to see where you landed, and a lot of makes a lot of sense. Very fluid, just the quick tap and type. How obvious was that for you? How'd you arrive at that?
Honestly, we're pretty contrarian, like by nature in what we're building. We always try to take like, hey, there's always defaults, right? Well, just like really try not to follow the default and see where that exploration might lead. That's kind of the reason we actually didn't have chat in our like design AI for a while. We just generated pages. And then, eventually we did realize, hey, people are actually asking questions like, how do I make this design better? And things like that. And so we did add more of a chat response. But I think our take is always like try to carve out the new ground, dog food the tool ourselves, and really try to see how does it fit into that true designer's mind. And what I realized is, wow, we all spend time literally describing these exact things as comments or specs in a mockup. Well, wouldn't it be magical if like it just built all the things that you're already describing, right? We are now looking at the actual live prototype code. We can look under the hood, we can share this as a link, but it looks exactly like our design. And I'm gonna go ahead and we clicked into Dan Mall, right? We could go back and then let's click into Grace Walker. So it looks like some of our images aren't updating, but we do have a different data for each piece. And then let's go ahead and say, hey Grace. What was Grace about freelancing? How do I get started as a freelancer? And of course, all right. So we ran into a bug. Of course, we're not actually hooking up to an LLM here. And so a lot of this is just mock data that's being, predefined. And unfortunately, it looks like it hit a snag in the prototype. But you could see that we're starting to connect the pieces, and some prompt engineering will get us there.
Yeah, you can see how it's a really good foundation, right? Like, even before you were hinting at it, it's very obvious to me how you've built a system that is going to allow people to plug into external data sources, drop in a set of API keys, all of a sudden make that an actual model. Like, it's having everything rooted in code and components feels like it's going to unlock a lot for you in the future.
Oh, let's see. There. All right. So we fixed our little bug, right? We got a real interaction where, again, this is just probably some generic responses. We could type in anything here, but we got the little animation. And, as a designer, this is something that I would want to just prototype with, feel out the interactions. And then again, at the end of the day, what you're going to be handing off is not this code that just AI wrote with, mock data. You're going to be going in and you're going to be giving the engineers this code that's not AI generated, that's actually part of your system. And let's developers have the same flexibility in implementing it from the starting with the front end as you as a designer want. at the end of the day as well, right? So we have different export functions. Of course, you can take it to a tool like Bolt or Replit or Cursor that's more prompt-based, and we can actually directly recreate that design as well. But as you kind of asked, we're really focused on teams that are actually building and shipping product. And while everyone's going to be closer to building, there's still going to be code bases. There's going to be engineers that you hand things off to. And that's really where we want to fit into that workflow instead of just, you know, vibe coding sort of everything.
For that handoff, the code piece, what are you, when you click on like the cursor tab, what are you creating in that world?
It's so
very cool.
Exactly. We're just, we're pretty much just wrapping the code in some basic prompting. So obviously cursor, if you're already working with cursor, you're probably going to be just as good, you know, taking the code itself. But these other tools need to run a few commands. They need to install these components for you. So we just wrap that in a prompt. But at the end of the day, everything's just code. Like code, because as a designer, you're working with code to begin with, it's just this magic material that you could take anywhere, right? And recreate it anywhere. And so we really just want to give the designers the ability to sculpt that, so you know that anything you do is not throwaway. They might just, you know, move to a different tool, but still be the exact thing that you made.
A lot of tools have that promise, but don't have as clear of a path toward building on top of like a real design system that has like team level adoption, not just individual person level adoption. And so I actually can see a world where Subframe, more than the majority of tools out there, really can write production code for designers who are a part of real teams with real engineers and not just creating projects for themselves or using code as a material to prototype with.
The inputs matter so much because the inputs are drive the outputs. And, you know, if you start with good inputs, you'll get good outputs. There's a right layer of abstraction still, right? Like, and this is something that, you know, we're working on towards as well. This really feels like a building tool, right? You have some of these constraints. You're seeing one page at a time. We don't have a full canvas feature yet right now. But I think it's about giving the design process the interface, again, it needs to play around, to explore, to be like, what would happen if I move this over here? And just kind of explore ideas really quickly. But just you're working with the material. There's like no more translation that happens during handoff. You're just handing off the same thing.
Amazing. Well, Philip, thank you for coming on and giving us like the real thing and rolling the dice on a live demo for us. This was very interesting. I think you have a approach that makes a lot of sense in a lot of different ways, and it was fun to see.
Thanks, Rid. It was great to be here.